You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hello and welcome to a slightly different episode this time. This time round, the guest being interviewed is, well, it's me. This was an taken from an Ask Me Anything session that I recorded in a Facebook group, private Facebook group that I'm a member of. They very kindly invited me to answer a whole bunch of pre-submitted questions. Thought it was something that you folks might be interested in. It's all around hypnosis and fears and all that sort of thing. So we've put it together to make this this episode of the radio show. Now, if you're watching this on video, unfortunately, due to a couple of technical issues, there is no video footage of me from the interview, only video footage of the wonderful Kerry, who did the actual interview. Basically, we did it over Facebook. My phone's front camera wasn't working. We couldn't get Facebook to use the back camera. And I completely forgot to switch on the studio camera. But hey, at least you get to enjoy the amazing Kerry Gibbs as she interviews me. So without any further ado, I shall hand you over to Kerry.
Okay, so Keith, do you want to explain who you are and what you do to start with as like an introduction?
Oh, goodness me. Now, there's a something, isn't there? okay, I'm Keith Blakemore Noble. I'm the UK's number one fear strategist. I help people transform their deepest fears into their greatest strengths. It's all about fears, phobias, that sort of thing. I've helped over 5,000 people across five continents to transform their lives since 2010. So I've been doing this for wow. for a little while. That's what yeah. I do in a nutshell.
Okay. So obviously there's been a post this week, mm-hmm. and it basically collected a lot of questions to ask you.
Excellent.
So we're just going to go through them.
Let's do this.
Yeah, cool. So there's some anonymous ones. So this first one was anonymous, and it's just as simple as, what is hypnosis?
Great question to start with. What is hypnosis? I guess basically hypnosis, it's kind of like, if you can describe it this way, an intense state of relaxation, which sounds a bit paradoxical, but you're basically really intense state of relaxation, a single-minded focus. At one point in the dim, distant past, it used to be called monoideaism, which is a bit of a mouthful, never caught on, which is a bit of a shame because it describes it really, really well. It's you kind of fixated mm-hmm. on just following a single idea. It's not sleep, despite the name coming from the Greek for sleep. And the best, a great example I can give is, have you ever been, say, reading a book, and you're so engrossed in the book, right. you forget you're in the room. You're just in the book. Yeah. Somebody walks into the room, says hello, and you nearly leap out of your skin. Oh, God, didn't hear you come in.
Yeah.
That is a form of trance. That's a form of hypnosis. So it's a perfectly natural thing. We all go through it many times every day. It's a perfectly natural state.
Yeah, kind of like when you just zone out.
Yeah, exactly. When you're zoning out, yeah. and you're just drifting on a single topic, or it happens a lot in the cinema. You're engrossed in the film. You completely forget you're there with your mates. These sorts of things. Perhaps a more relevant question is, why do we use hypnosis? And certainly certainly from a therapy perspective, the reason we use hypnosis is so that we can speak directly with the unconscious to help it to make changes. Because if you take a young child, say a child age of 3, and tell them all about this jolly fat guy dressed in red with a big white beard who comes down the chimney every Christmas and gives presents to good boys and girls, they'll believe every word of it. If you were to come up with that concept and say it to a 30-year-old, they're not going to believe it. What's the difference? Mm-hmm. It's because around about the age of 7, we develop this thing, this filter, which kind of takes information that's coming in and gives a wee bit of a check on it. Does this fit with what we believe? Does this fit with how we see the world? If it does, it allows it through. If it doesn't, it'll reject it, which is why you can't just sort of think yourself out of a situation. If you've got a problem or a phobia or a fear or a mindset issue, it's really hard just to think, you know what, I can do this. I am good enough to do this, whatever. Because we've got that filter in there that's going, no, we're not. We can't do this. Nope, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
Which is why affirmations are such a poor thing to use. They're so ineffective for most people because you're kind of trying to beat your unconscious around the head. I'm successful. I'm abundant. We're not. Nope, nope, clearly we're not. So it doesn't go in. But with hypnosis, we kind of bypass that layer. So we're speaking directly with the unconscious and we're giving it options. We're giving it new ways of seeing things. So that's what hypnosis is. It related to that is NLP, which is another set of tools that I use. And with NLP, again, we're talking directly with the unconscious, but we're doing it in a different way. It's almost talking with the unconscious in its own language. And so that's why we use hypnosis and why we use NLP. They're different ways of connecting directly to the unconscious so that you can make the changes that you want to make.
Okay, amazing. Because I think, you know, when somebody says hypnosis, they just think of stage hypnosis and, telling people to cluck like chickens and stuff. So you don't realise that actually it can be very powerful. Which then leads on to a question from Stephen Jones. And I was told by two famous hypnotists that I was unhypnotisable. Is this true or were they just trying to get me off stage?
The very last word in that question is very interesting there, trying to get me off stage. So that suggests that these were both in stage hypnosis situations. It says famous hypnotists, we could probably try and guess who they are. It doesn't really matter. Was that you or was that me?
Yeah.
Crying, screaming there.
It was my child.
But basically, everybody is hypnotizable. If you want to be hypnotized, you can be. Everyone can be. But different people are more susceptible to hypnosis than others are. Now, with stage hypnosis, one of the key things is to get the person into hypnosis quickly and easy. The quicker you can do it, the more time you can spend on the routines and everything. It gets really, really boring for the audience if you have to spend the first, if you have to spend the first half hour trying getting everybody on stage into trance, you'll bore the whole audience with it in that half hour. So, stage hypnotists will be looking for people who are really highly susceptible to hypnosis so that they can go in quickly, go in deep, and you can get great results. Now, there's different ways in which hypnotists do this. Paul McKenna.
So I guess they can spot it. They can spot who's going to
be quite quick. Well, that's what I was about to go on to give you a couple of different examples. One is Paul McKenna was a very famous stage hypnotist, one of the first big ones on TV. What he would do is basically just invite everybody who wants to join to come up onto stage. He then sort of go through different tricks, different things to spot who was susceptible. Those who were, he would keep. Those who weren't, he would invite to leave the stage and basically say, no, you're not suitable for this, or might even say, you're not hypnotizable, because it's a quick and easy way to let them go. Darren Brown used to do that sort of thing. He actually trained hypnosis under Paul McKenna, but he's now evolved his tricks. So he actually goes through some stuff before then to kind of spot in the audience who is going to be susceptible, who isn't, and he will then invite the susceptible people straight up onto stage. That's how he does it these days. So, they'll either kind of try and spot who's susceptible and invite them up, or just get everybody who wants to join in up and kind of weed through them and whittle them down. So, Stephen, it doesn't mean you're unhypnotizable. It simply means you're not in the highly susceptible category, which is why the famous hypnotist...
And he wouldn't have provided that entertainment then.
Exactly. So all it meant was, for their purposes, you aren't a good fit, but you are absolutely hypnotizable if you want to be at some point in the future.
Okay, interesting. So, Philip Rood, is hypnotism a one-trick-fits-all kind of thing, or do you have to do different routines for different people?
Oh, that kind of kind of neatly leads on from Stephen's one.
It does. And I think Mike's done very well with these questions and the way
structured it. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So people tend to fall into one of three kind of categories. You get highly susceptible. That's about a fifth of the public are highly susceptible. So you find it very easy to go into trance. Then you've got maybe 3/5 of the public are in the middle range. They can go into trance, but really you need to use the classic close your eyes, relax, deep breath, all that imagery to guide them into trance over a 10-20 minute period. Then you get the people who are the remaining fifth who are quite resistant to hypnosis. Even when they want to be hypnotized, their mind is kind of battling it, is analyzing what's going on, it's been hyperlogical, analyzing everything. They find it really difficult to go into trance. So for the three different categories, you would need to use different approaches. For the highly susceptible people, lots of ways you can get them in really quickly. For the majority of people, use the classic progressive type of thing. Relax, close your eyes. For the people who are very susceptible, you kind of really need to tailor it to them. I met a guy once who really wanted to be hypnotized. He'd approached many hypnotists and they'd all failed, which of course builds up in his mind that, oh God, I can't do hypnosis. Had a chat with him. It turned out it's because of the way his mind was working. Every time the hypnotist said something, part of his mind was analysing it, which of course keeps you awake, keeps you fully alert. So what I did was designed a little hypnosis induction based around that to make use of that to actually enable him to then fall into trance. So it's not a one trick fits all thing. You do kind of have to tailor it depending upon how responsive the person is.
So how long does it normally take you to decide how susceptible somebody would be?
Good question. There's kind of things you can do, spot it within a minute or so of meeting somebody. You can get a vague idea, get a judge reasonably well, and from there you're just sort of confirming your suspicions with the way you talk with them, what you get them to do, all this sort of thing. So you can be doing that long before you even mention the word hypnosis. You can have a really good idea of how susceptible they're going to be.
Okay. So another one from Anonymous. Do you use anything other than hypnosis to help with phobias?
Right, yes. It's interesting with hypnosis. Most of the time, when I work with people with phobias and with fears, most of it, it's NLP based. Rarely I use hypnosis, not because there's anything wrong with hypnosis, it's just for phobias and fears. Generally, NLP offers a really quick and powerful way to do it. That said, there are times where somebody is adamant they want hypnosis. It's like, I need hypnosis to help me get rid of this, to let me get rid of this phobia. And as a therapist, that tells me something. That tells me that no amount of NLP is going to get them good results. They've already told themselves hypnosis is what it's going to take. So when you hypnotize me, I'm going to get rid of the phobia. So what do you do? Obviously, hypnotize them because that's what they're expecting. But generally, for the NLP, occasionally it'll be hypnosis. Sometimes it'll be a mixture of the two, a bit of NLP and a bit of hypnosis to polish it off. And round it off, but it really depends upon the individual, their expectations, how they respond and react to what's going on.
Yeah, so I guess then what Alison Cook said is there ever a situation or reason that hypnotherapy would not cure a phobia? Then there would be, because you obviously use different techniques.
Yeah, so we use different techniques simply because NLP generally faster for helping people with phobias and fears. There is, however, a situation where hypnotherapy could not cure a phobia. Well, there's two situations. One is if the person doesn't want to overcome the phobia. So and an example might be, so you've got a phobia of spiders. Why is it you want to get rid of that? Well, I don't really, but my partner tells me I need to get rid of it, so I thought I'd come and give it a shot. You got no chance because they really don't want to get rid of it. You'd have more chance of hypnotizing their partner into having a phobia of spiders than you would in hypnotizing this person to getting rid. The other situation where it wouldn't work is if they have kind of like a hidden gain from it, which is where they're not consciously aware of it, but their unconscious mind has kind of realized, hey, having this phobia actually has an advantage for me.
Okay.
And if I get rid of the phobia, I lose that advantage.
Yeah.
So in that case, therapy isn't going to work. What you need to do is find what that advantage is and help the unconscious to find other ways to get that same advantage, and then it will be happy to let go of the phobia. But those tend to be the two main situations where hypnotherapy wouldn't cure a phobia.
Okay, so what's been your hardest phobia to cure?
Again, it's not really down to the phobia itself. It's down to the person, whether they kind of want to.
Depends on.
Yeah. I was going to say all phobias are equally easy to cure. That's not actually true. There is one phobia which would be really, really hard to cure. No matter how much the person wanted to cure it, there is one phobia that would be really hard. And that's a phobia called fromenophobia. Fromenophobia, which is a fear of thinking. And it's actually a phobia. Fortunately, it's extremely rare. But the reason that I feel that would be really hard to cure is whether you're using hypnosis or whether you're using NLP, you have to think. And if your phobia is thinking, it's going to be really hard for you to think in order to be able to go through the process and get rid of it. So generally, I would say phobias, there is no phobia that's harder than any other, with the exception of fromenophobia, the fear of thinking. Now, sometimes people think, oh, my phobia is really, 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 really strong. I just have to think of the thing and I'm having a panic attack. Surely that means it's going to be really hard for me to get rid of. Paradoxically, those sort of people find it easiest of all to get rid of their phobias. That's because phobias and related fears are not something we're born with. We're not born scared of anything. As anyone who's had young kids will know, they are utterly fearless. We learn phobias throughout life.
Definitely. I noticed that with my children. I remember I got a snake put on me.
Yeah.
And I was petrified, and then obviously they saw that, and then
exactly.
So now they don't like
it. Exactly. Yeah. So they've learned from seeing how mummy reacts. They've learned, oh, that's how we react to everything. And that's one of the ways in which we learn and develop phobias. And the thing is, the better you are at being able to do the phobia, so the stronger your phobia reaction, the better you were at learning. If you were rubbish at learning how to do a phobia, you're not going to have the phobia because you're not going to be able to do it. But if you have a really strong phobia, that meant you were really good at learning it.
But how do you learn to be scared of thinking, to have a phobia against thinking?
That's a really good question. I don't know. As I say, fortunately, that's an incredibly rare one. There are very, very, very few cases of it. It's possible that something really unpleasant happened when they were thinking. That's possible,
right.
Or it could be related to other psychological issues or disorders that the person has, and it could be an effect of that. But with phobias, if you have a really, really strong one, that means you've been very good at learning it, which means you can be very good at learning how not to do the phobia, which is why if you have a very strong phobia, it's actually easier for you to completely conquer that phobia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So have you personally ever had a fear or phobia cured by hypnotism?
I have had three phobias, all of which I've conquered. Only one was done through hypnotism. The other two were done mostly through NLP. But again, it's all the tools that I use. But yes, I have completely conquered myself of three phobias using this stuff. One phobia was spiders.
Can you get out?
I used to be terrified of spiders. Horrible. Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
I remember one time I was helping a friend.
They're everywhere.
So,
they are literally everywhere.
I know. There was one time I was helping a friend clear out a garage, and I'm 6 foot two tall. He's about the same. Neither of us are slim. We're big chaps. And we move this big sheet of wood, and a whole lot of spiders scuttled from behind it. We both immediately pinned ourselves against the other wall, going, it's like, come on. So, you know, we're more threat to them than they are to us. Yeah, it doesn't help, does it?
Yeah. No. I know, it's crazy, isn't it? I think there's so many people are bothered about
They are. It has to be one of the most common phobias. So I totally got rid of that one. Absolutely fine with phobias now. Heights was another one. Heights used to terrify them.
Yeah.
Living daylight out of me.
My dad's terrified of heights.
Now, completely gone. And the other one was social phobia, speaking with strangers. It used to terrify me. Even doing something like this would have been impossible. It was like, oh, I can't do it. But and suddenly meeting strangers and so on was out of the question. Nowadays, doesn't bother me in the slightest. So, all three of those I've conquered through using this stuff, which is how I know it works, because I've done it with myself.
You're living proof. So what is the weirdest phobia you've ever treated?
Weirdest phobia I've ever treated was somebody who was scared of the colour yellow. It used to really, really freak them out. And
that's mad.
Now they're absolutely fine with the colour. But yeah, that's probably counts as the weirdest, I would say.
I know, I've heard of somebody being having phobia of roundabouts and of tomato sauce.
Oh, interesting one. Yeah.
I mean, that's
the thing with phobia. You can have a phobias of literally anything.
Anything. Yeah, because it's not just the spiders, the snakes, heights, water. Like, it's, you know, it's like you say, the colour.
Yeah, yeah.
And roundabouts.
Crazy. Exactly.
Yeah. And how long did it take to train to do all the things you do today? I guess it's like anything, though. You're constantly learning and constantly picking things up.
Exactly. I would say 9 years so far. About a decade since I first started learning this so far, and I'll be continuing to learn it throughout the course of my life. About 6 months, over the course of the first 6 months, that I learned the tools and started using them and so on. Although I would say it's the years after initially learning NLP and hypnosis, which are the important ones, because it's one thing to learn the tools, but it's quite another to actually be using them in the real world.
Massively. It's like law as well. Like going to uni, it's so different in practice.
Absolutely.
They say the same with like driving a car, don't they? Yes. Like you're driving your lessons, but actually you really start learning when you've actually got a license and you're on the road.
Yeah, my mum told me that. So when I passed my test, she said, right, you passed your test, now you learn how to drive. Okay.
Yeah. I know. So Gemma is interested to know what led you to this field of work. Was it accidental or always a passion?
Kind of a bit of both. Something my sister reminded me when I told her that I'd become a hypnotist, something my sister told me which I'd completely forgotten, was when I was about the age of 12 or so, I was fascinated with hypnotism. And I used to go around pretending I could hypnotize people. And I used to tell anyone who'd listen that I was going to find out how hypnosis worked, I was going to learn it, and I was going to become a hypnotist. As I grew up, I completely forgot all about that. I used to be incredibly painfully shy, with the social phobia and so on. Things eventually came to a head, and I decided to do something about it. And me being me, I decided I'm going to learn. I found out about someone who's doing stuff about NLP and hypnosis. And I had a look and thought, that could be quite good to help me sort myself out. So I started learning it, became really good at it, found that I could use it to help other people. And as luck would have it, just after I became certified in all this stuff, my boss, because at that point I'd been working in IT for 20 years, my boss came to me and said, sorry, we're going to have to let you go. Company cutbacks, your position's redundant. Here's a wheelbarrow full of cash, never come back. It's like, well, if ever I was looking for a sign, this is it. So I can't.
Exactly.
So it's something which had been an interest I'd forgotten about, but obviously it was still sat there at the back of my mind waiting for the right moment kind of fell into it to sort myself out, discovered I was good at it, and then was given the kick from my old workplace. So,
A bit of both.
A bit of both, I'd say, yes. A bit of both.
Yeah, okay. Can you hypnotise someone without them realising it?
Yes.
Or does it go back to what you were saying earlier, like they have to be thinking about it?
Yeah, you can hypnotise people without them realising it, but it's nothing like you see portrayed in Hollywood. So you can sort of hypnotise someone and get them into a bit of a light trance without them being aware of it. You might even get them to do a few bits and pieces, like maybe yawn or scratch their ear or whatever. But you can't get them into hypnosis and make them do all sorts of things.
Well, that's the next question, actually. Like, can you use hypnosis to make people do things you want them to do?
Good follow-up question. Mike's done a really good job putting these together.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
indeed. Not really, because the thing with hypnosis, a lot of people think it's mind control. It's not. Key thing with hypnosis, the person who is in control is actually the person being hypnotized, because you have to follow the instructions of the hypnotist. It's kind of like a sat-nav. Yeah. If I jump into the car, program my destination in the sat-nav, drive along, the sat-nav then says, take the next turning on the left, and I go, ha, screw you, I'm going to turn right. Yay, see, I've turned right. Congratulations, you've proved you have free will, but you're not getting to your destination. Same with hypnosis. The hypnotist will give you the suggestions to get you, guide you into trance, and to guide you to do the things you'd like to make the changes you want to make. If you don't accept those suggestions, if you don't close your eyes and you don't relax and blah, 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 you're not going to go into trance. And if the hypnotist tells you, makes suggestions to do things that you really don't want to do, you will not do them. When we're our unconscious is actually the most moral part of us. And so if I were to hypnotize you, I'm not going to. But if I were to hypnotize you, I swear I'm not going to. But if I were to hypnotize you now and tell you to give me your PIN, obviously you're not going to do it, because your unconscious is going to go, wait a minute, pop you back out. And you're going, what are you playing at? So,
although I probably would. I have no filter.
there would be some things which would be against even your morals. I call that sounding judgmental. Yeah. It's not how I meant it. You know what I mean? there are things which you would not do. And even in the deepest of trances, you could not be made to do those. So, no, hypnosis is not mind control. It's not like Hollywood. It's very much like a sat-nav. You follow the directions, you'll reach the destination, but you still have full control.
Interesting. Mm. Can you do that quick hypnosis trick that Derren Brown does?
Oh, yes.
I haven't seen it. I don't really watch it, to be honest, so I don't know which one that is.
Basically, he's got various ways he can get somebody into a trance really quickly, like within seconds.
Okay, when they go, like, sleep.
Or come up to somebody and kind of go to handshake and get them into trance. And the answer is yes, I can. I can get somebody into trance using a handshake. I can get somebody into trance using just 5 words. That's always quite an impressive
one. That's insane.
I would have to demonstrate it. I certainly don't want to say it in case somebody listening goes into a trance. We don't really want to be doing that.
So that was from Phil Hill, and he's asked also that he once went 8 weeks without eating sweets, chocolates and cake after hypnotherapy. My previous record was 8 minutes. How
is he asking how he managed to do 8 weeks rather than 8 minutes, or is he asking how
obviously, because that was a reaction from the hypnotherapy.
I would say the first time where his record was 8 minutes, at that point there was probably a lot of hidden benefit to him eating the sweets and the chocolate, or the things that triggered it just had not been touched on in the therapy at all, so it hadn't really addressed any of it. So whatever they did in the therapy just wasn't addressing the problem, didn't make any of the changes. When he went 8 weeks without eating it, they'd made deeper changes. They had put in the new options, the new ways of behaving. His mind had gone, oh, yes, we can do this instead of eating sweet. Yeah, we'll do that. But there was still some hidden thing that was still in there that after 8 weeks, it came along and went, bing, ah, come on, eat some sweets. So basically it just hadn't...
So would you need to keep going back to like...
No, because once you conquer the once you understand exactly what's going on and address the underlying causes, then the change is permanent. Now, that's not to say that it would be impossible for him to eat sweets, even with making the full changes, because what it does is it gives you additional options. So. Okay. Previously, the mind might have thought the only option in this situation is to eat sweets and chocolates. That's the only thing we can do. You then give it other options, so it goes, oh, I'm feeling a bit peckish, maybe a bit stressed. You know, I would love an apple right now. And you end up eating apples instead of eating sweets or chocolates or whatever. I can give examples. There was one lady, oh, this was back about 9 years ago. She wanted to, she was with Weight Watchers, doing reasonably well with losing weights, but crisps were her Achilles heel. If you sat a bowl of crisps next to her and you were having a conversation with her, she would devour the bowl of crisps without even being aware that she was eating them. It's kind of unconscious.
Yeah.
So we did a wee process together, turned crisps into something that she absolutely hated. The thought of eating crisps made her feel physically nauseous. She has...
I've seen... Paul McKenna, and he had I Can Make You Thin.
Oh, yes.
I had that, and I had the and the app and stuff. Yeah. And it makes absolute total sense, really, what he's saying. Mm-hmm. You know, like, eat consciously, slow down, you know.
Yeah.
He says, don't restrict, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't see it.
Exactly, because, again, it's to eat consciously. And now with this lady, she wasn't consciously aware that she was eating them.
Oh, I don't eat
crisps. So you can't think, oh, I won't eat these crisps, when you're not even aware that you're eating them. But what we did using NLP was work at the unconscious level, so that she associated crisps deep at the unconscious level. She associated with something really, really vile. So that the thought of, oh, I'll eat those crisps never even came into her head. It was like, oh, sure, get those things away.
I've heard that.
Yeah, and this is now 9 years later. She still has not touched crisps to this day.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's because we worked deep at the unconscious level, created the association between crisps and something deeply unpleasant for her, so that her unconscious mind just doesn't even think about eating. You might as well have put a bowl of wriggling maggots next to her for all the appetite. Yeah. Would be the same result. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, and then the last two are from Mike. So he says, how staged are the famous hypnosis shows, like the Paul McKenna ones that we used to be on TV? Obviously, that, you know, we've just mentioned.
Alrighty. Obviously, I haven't been involved with them, so I can't say for 100% certainty, but I would say with 99.9% certainty, completely unstaged. As in, everybody who was there were volunteers. They weren't stooges. They genuinely went into trance, genuinely did those things. None of it would have been acted. None of it was stooges or any of that sort of thing. And I would say that is true for the vast majority of stage hypnosis acts.
Because it does get bad publicity, doesn't it? Where they're saying, oh, it's not real, it's not this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I've seen, I was in, where was I? Iron Apple.
All right, yeah.
My friend got hypnotized at this beach party. It was crazy. Yeah. Like, and it was totally true, totally real. Yeah. So, but I think from seeing my friend do that, it changed my thought process of like the stage stuff. And, you know, I know it does, like,
yeah,
like they got them to like do all this stuff. Like, I can't even really remember, it was so many years ago, but she was completely under trance. It was so funny.
Yeah.
It was obviously entertainment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, You know, I find the same when I do hypnosis shows. I get people at the start who are really skeptical. Go, oh yeah, it's all staged. They then see the show. It's like, oh, because I also never use Stooges. I'll tell you the main reason, well, the reason I don't use them, and the reason I know that people like Paul McKenna don't use them, and the reason I know stage hypnotists in general don't use them. We don't need to, because the stuff works. And if you used one, eventually word's going to get out, totally destroy.
Of course.
And thirdly, a person who's hypnotized is a heck of a lot more amusing than someone who's playing and pretending. Because when they're hypnotized, they genuinely go all out into playing this thing at full everything. So it is a lot more entertaining than it would ever be if you did use
totally.
Stooges.
Like, I remember they my friend didn't drive at the time, and they said, I'll change, because I got to pretend to be in a car.
Oh, yeah.
So she was in her car, and they were like, change the gear, and she just like pushed a button. Like, everybody else was like doing it properly, but she pushed a button. Oh. I was like, that is not how to change the gear. So funny.
Yeah.
So can you hypnotise someone to react to a trigger word? I think I've seen that on some like Paul McKenna shows as well. Like every time they say a word,
something happens.
They do.
Absolutely. In fact, when you hypnotize somebody, you will actually use trigger words. You know that whole thing of they basically go, sleep, and the person goes back to sleep and ends that particular sketch onto the next bit. That's a trigger word. You can use it for all sorts of things. A couple from shows that I did, one was I hypnotized one lady to, when she heard the Mission Impossible theme, she would believe with absolute certainty she was a secret agent, that the crown jewels were hidden somewhere in the room and she had to find them before the evil baddies got them. Okay. We then carried on with the rest of the show. A random point, got the sound guy to play Mission Impossible theme. Bam! She went round looking, trying to find the crown jewels. So went up to her. What are you doing? She says, out of the way, I've got to find the crown jewels before the evil thieves get them. Woo, okay. And then we stopped the music and she's like, what am I doing here? And another one,
I'd be so embarrassed. I don't think I'd ever like volunteer to be doing that ever.
One of the keys whenever I do shows is I always make a point of making sure that when people laugh, they're laughing with the participants. They're not laughing at them.
Yeah.
Which means when the person knows that I'm not going to make a fool of them, but I'm going to help them create humorous situations which everyone will enjoy, including them, they kind of let themselves go that bit more because they know, oh, I can trust him. He's not going to make a prat out of me. I'm going to be entertaining these people and I'm going to be enjoying it.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, because with stage hypnosis, it's so easy to get laughs by just making, say, hello, by making someone do something stupid and make a fool of themselves. It's easy to get laughs. It's cheap laughs. It's like it's easy for a comedian to get laughs by just walk on stage and utter a string of swear words, people will start laughing. But
I know,
The skill is where you can create whole situations where everybody who's involved is thoroughly enjoying themselves, because the audience then also relax that bit, because people find it funny when you're kind of pointing and laughing, but there's always that little bit of unease. Whereas when it's obvious the participants are relaxed and enjoying it, and you're laughing with them at the crazy situations that are going on, everybody gets that bit more enjoyment out of it, which then feeds back to the audience, which then feeds back to the participants, which means they then play it even more and even bigger. But trigger word, you can actually use trigger words, you can use sound, you could use smell, scent, for example. When you smell this, when you smell freshly baked bread, you will blah, 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 and then bring on some freshly baked bread and bam, off they'll go.
So, well, that's all the questions ended. Is there anything else that you want to add to what you've been talking about? Is there anything you want to tell people about what you do, like a bit of a plug?
Oh, goodness me. I'm always up for chatting about hypnosis and about NLP, whether it's stage, whether it's therapy, whatever it is. I mean, if anyone ever wants a chat, more than happy to have a chat about it. if they want to, if they want help in conquering fears and phobias, obviously, yeah, more than happy to have a no obligation chat about that. Explore it. If they want to learn these things, NLP and hypnosis, I'm trained at train the trainer level in these. I do run courses occasionally. If anyone wants to get in touch, absolutely, let's have a chat. There'll be absolutely no hard sell, none of that stuff. Just genuinely, let's have a friendly chat. See what you want. Yeah. And best ways they can get in touch, get me through Facebook or go to the website keithblakemorenoble.com and contact me through that.
Okay, yeah, you can put your if you put your link in the comments.
Certainly will.
Awesome. Well, it's a shame we couldn't see you.
I know, and I've got dressed up and everything.
Didn't want to admit, I haven't even brushed my hair.
You look fabulous. You always look fabulous, whatever you're wearing.
Oh God, thank you. Well, that's it then.
Cool.
But if anybody else wants to do what we've done with Keith, where we can actually see you, maybe. Oh, my kids are now being loud. Get in touch with Mike, because he's got a list of people that we're going to be doing this with, like, every Sunday. And it should be quite fun. I think today's been quite knowledgeable. I've definitely learned a lot. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And if Mike ever wants to experience being hypnotized to do something based on a trigger word, let's get together and do it.
Perfect. Awesome. Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. Bye for now.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. To find out more, please visit keithblakemorenoble.com.